To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission this morning will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant, and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in today's discussion is 877-300-7645. There have been a number of stories out of Afghanistan where Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, an extraordinarily corrupt individual, has demanded that U.S. troops no longer operate in the Wardak province. And it is interesting to read the stories about why that is so. And I'm going to share these stories with you. I cannot tell you whether or not the reports are accurate. I suspect some of them are. I suspect some of them are not. But what this does tell us when we consider these stories is it reinforces the fact that 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when I said that the invasion of Afghanistan will be counterproductive, that it will end up very much like Vietnam, was correct. This from Reuters. 2 days after masked men burst into Bibi Shireen's house and took her son away, villagers found his corpse, half eaten by dogs, under a bridge in Afghanistan's Wardak province. His fingers were cut off. He was badly beaten. His hands were swollen. His throat was slit, she told Reuters in her small mud brick house. One of the things that we have difficulty with, cognitive dissonance, if you will, is that in the Islamic world, it is extraordinarily common for people to live in mud brick houses. Cliche box, these adobe kind of structures. Now, there was nothing wrong with an adobe structure if you were living in the 17th century in an uncivilized area. You know, if you were probably not appropriate to call California in the 16 and 1700s uncivilized, but you know, if there were not ready access to the normal kinds of tools that you would use for building and furnaces and the like, adobe would be a reasonable building material. But in Afghanistan, you know, Afghanistan has had cultures come in and out, as has the entire Middle East, because of the influence of the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Assyrians, the Hittites, for what now? 5,000 years? Nearly 6,000 years? And yet they're still living in mud brick houses? It tells you that the predominant influence over the region, and you'll see it all throughout the region, you know, these pictures now that are brought to us on a daily basis out of Syria, where communities are just pulverized. But what the buildings that still stand look like, you know, a collection of mud brick houses. We need, as a people, as a world, to look at throughout the Islamic areas that are not, you know, personal estates that are floating on oceans of money, oil, that apart from the artificial nature of the OPEC estates, why is it that the Muslim regions of the world are so impoverished? But nonetheless, she was in a small brick house. Why is it also that this kind of grotesque violence of a corpse, throat slit, fingers cut off, would be common in Afghanistan, but uncommon in most of the world, apart from Islam. Anyway, the article goes on with a quote. It says, why is the government not listening to our voices? Why are they not stopping Americans from doing such things? So the immediate conclusion was this was a night raid, therefore it was the Americans. Why? Because the Taliban typically operate during the day, and the American special forces typically operate at night. And it's also a case that those who are perpetrating these raids typically speak with an accent that is not centric to that region, and they are typically deploying weapons that are used by the Americans and not by the Taliban. Shireen supplied no proof that the Americans or the Afghan forces working with them captured and killed her son. Reuters was unable to independently verify her claims. Such allegations, however, have prompted Afghan President Hamid Karzai to bar U.S. special forces from the Wardak province, a potentially risky move because it could give the Taliban more room to operate in a strategically important area close to the capital of Kabul. So whether or not Americans are perpetrating this. Now, you say, oh, gosh, there's no way that an American is going to go in and slit somebody's throat and cut off their fingers and throw them under a bridge to be eaten by dogs. But I'm telling you that there is proof that Americans have become that vicious and that misguided. You know, the international court case that was brought to our attention of the German national that was on holiday in Macedonia captured by the CIA, sodomized, tortured, raped for months on end, and then finally thrown into a ravine by a road in a foreign country. So the United States is absolutely capable of doing it. We do it. Is it likely that we are doing these particular attacks? I don't think so. Is it possible that the Afghan National Army, that the army that we are sponsoring and paying for is perpetrating? Absolutely. It's also possible that the Taliban have realized the same thing that the North Vietnamese came to realize, that if you surreptitiously perpetrate a horrible attack on children in particular, that you can garner total sympathy for your cause. And in the minds of the people, you can cause the people to hate the occupying army, even if the occupying army at the time is not doing something detestable. If the occupying army has done things that are viewed as detestable, which Americans certainly have, then you can actually perpetrate these crimes clandestinely, blame the occupying army, and it means that everything that America attempted to do in Afghanistan was for naught. We made a bad situation worse. We not only are going to leave there with the Taliban in charge again, but this time the Taliban will be loved as opposed to hated. And America, rather than being respected, will be despised. And Afghanistan will have, the fundamentalist Muslims in Afghanistan that we pushed out temporarily will have destabilized Pakistan. And the Americans will have provided more weapons for Pakistan, which is now further destabilized because of our efforts. And they have nuclear weapons. I mean, everything we did here blew up in our faces, just as it did in Iraq, which is why we ought not be patriotic. We ought not be telling our troops how wonderful a job that they're doing, even if our troops aren't responsible for this. The fact is they were deployed stupidly by Americans' politicians. The men who took Shireen's son had shown flashlights in her eyes, and she could not identify them, but she said that they spoke with a southern Afghan accent, the same as those of the Afghans who work with the U.S. Special Forces in her region. Most Afghans see night raid tactics as tactics of the U.S. and U.S.-led forces, because we have night vision goggles. Karzai's decision to bar U.S. Special Forces from Ordak. Let me just pause there a moment. If you want people to hate you, then do what our Special Forces do. Have all your raids at night. So when their family goes to sleep at night, they don't know if they're going to wake up the next morning. And they suspect that there is a real possibility, because it happens regularly, that out of the sky or through their front door, things that kill will invade their home, take the lives of their children. You go to bed every night wondering whether or not the Americans are going to bomb you that night or plow through your door based upon misinformation. And misinformation is extraordinarily common. I mean, both sides will turn people over to the Americans for these kinds of raids, whether or not that individual deserves it. And so you go to bed every night with this threat, just as in North Vietnam, the threat should be in Vietnam was that you go to bed tonight and there is a likelihood, a possibility certainly, that napalm or Agent Orange or a carpet of bombs be dropped on your home. When we operate like this at night with our special forces, we bring this kind of perspective of America on ourselves. You can't win a war by doing this. That's why I constantly say that when you're fighting against a religion, the first thing to do is expose and condemn the religion for whatever deed it has perpetrated that has caused you to go to war with it. We didn't do that. You need to correctly identify the source of the perpetrator's rage. And then you need to expose and condemn that religion so that it takes the zeal out of the murderous zeal, out of the zealot of the religion. Now, I have corresponded with Kenneth Roberts after our interview where he spoke of the Stockholm Syndrome and its effect on Muslims and why it has caused Islam to infect and destroy so much. And one of the things that he said is that his goal is to expose the truth about the religion sufficiently that it plants a seed of doubt in a potential jihadist mind. Because the moment you put doubt in the jihadist mind, using the truth, using words, then it becomes ever more likely that they will refuse the urge to kill in the name of their religion. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're talking about Karzai's decision to bar U.S. Special Forces from WARDAC and its potential implications on the now almost 12-year-long conflict. The concern in the U.S. is, what does that mean for whatever American troops are left behind after the NATO troops leave within the next year or so? But what it means is that by Karzai saying that I'm agreeing with you, those who are complaining, I'm agreeing with the woman who says that that was the Americans that that captured her son and that slit his throat and cut off his fingers and threw him off the side of the road to be devoured by dogs. That's what Karzai is saying. And by him saying that, what he is saying is that I understand that the Americans are going to leave here, and I want to make certain that I am seen as being on the side of the Afghan people, and I also want to be seen as being on the side of the Taliban, because the Taliban is not going to leave when the Americans leave. And therefore, what Karzai is doing is assuring that America comes off as the enemy, as the perpetrator of these horrible things. And when you recognize that Islam is nothing but a brew of absurd lies, the Quran is the dumbest book ever written. Muhammad was easily the most repulsive man who ever lived. Everything that Islam is based on is so readily proved to be untrue that you realize that people who are going to buy into a lie of that magnitude, that they're easily fooled. And so if the president of the country says, yeah, I agree with you, those are Americans that are doing it, so I'm going to protect the people by prohibiting the Americans from entering your homes. What he is doing is undermining everything that America sought to achieve. Now, America's invasion of Afghanistan was stupid from the beginning. Every aspect of it was absurd from the beginning. It was a lose-lose scenario before we began. But even the high hopes of those who are patriotic and militaristic and political, those hopes are dashed. It's like Vietnam. You know, the hopes of prevailing of a positive outcome in Vietnam, of course, were zero before we went in, and we stayed there long after we recognized that there was no hope of achieving a favorable outcome. Well, the same thing is true in Afghanistan. The writing has been on the wall for a very long time. There is absolutely no hope for a positive outcome. Under those circumstances, the intelligent thing to do would be to leave, not leave later, after more have died, but to leave now. Presidential spokesman Amil Faizi told Reuters on Monday that there was evidence to back up the accusations of abuse. So here's the spokesperson, the media director, if you will, for Karzai's government, and saying, we agree with the women. We have evidence to prove that Americans are doing this, that they're breaking into homes and slitting the wrists of our children. Quote, our statements are based on documents and other evidence provided by provincial officials. The Navy's operations are conducted by U.S. Special Forces and some Afghan individuals working for them, Faizi said. He declined to elaborate. So, here again, is it true that Americans are going in and savaging children? Possible. They don't go into the mode of my country is this moral beacon of light and my soldiers are wonderful, heroic individuals who would never do something like this, because we do. The proof is ubiquitous. It's undeniable. We do. Now, did we do this particular crime? Probably not. But here, it doesn't matter, does it? Yeah, I suppose. I mean, that it does matter if Americans slit this young boy's throat or the Taliban did it under disguise. But in the end, in terms of its influence, it won't matter. Because from the perspective of the Afghani people, America did it. Which means that there is absolutely no chance of a positive outcome. In addition to claiming abuses, the Afghan government and military officials and Western officials said in extensive interviews that the allegations of abuse had deepened mistrust between Karzai's administration and the American allies. There is no trust. I mean, this again is like jumping in the pool and swimming around for a half an hour and then say, you know, we're getting wetter. There's been hatred, total distrust, just as there was in Vietnam, and for good reason. Karzai is an absolute unreliable scum. But so are most of the Americans dealing with him.
Who wants to...
Welcome back to San Remis. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. I was chatting with Scott during the break. Might be harsh for people to hear that there is a genuine possibility that these attacks, these savage attacks that are being attributed to Americans, are actually being perpetrated by Americans. I'm not saying that these that we have reviewed here in this article were. I'm saying that there is a genuine possibility. Certainly, the CIA is capable of this kind of savage behavior because we've had it demonstrated to us, proven to us in courts of law. But think of the American boys that go over there. Now, we already know that we have robbed our children of their conscience, that we have robbed them of their ability to be discerning and judgmental, to exercise good judgment, to know that which is moral from that which is not. We've already ripped out and destroyed their conscience. That's part of the American education process. So now you're sending these boys over there, and these are boys that would naturally be prone to fighting anyway. You don't join the military because you're a flower child. And you put them in an environment where they're brainwashed into believing that they are there to serve the people who are just disgusting. Not only living lives that are disgusting, you see the way that they abuse women. You witness the way they treat animals. You witness their vulgar behavior. You witness their willingness to commit pedophilia on young children. You witness the torturous murders they perpetrate. And you are put in an environment where not only do you see these things, but the very people you're told that you are serving are trying to kill you and they hate you. It's impossible to be in that situation and not have it influence your actions. Impossible. Particularly under the circumstances of the education system that we have here in America, where we rob people of their ability to think rationally, morally. And so this is the kind of thing that you would expect. It's why 11 years ago, on thousands of radio programs, I said, we ought not be invading Afghanistan. This will turn out badly. It's going to stain America. It's counterproductive. There is no way to win, and we are going to make a bad situation worse. It's going to mirror every bad aspect of Vietnam and add to that as well. And it has. It was easy to foresee. Now, this is what it's turned out. It turned out just this way. The article continues, people complained of being beaten, tortured by U.S. Special Forces on a daily basis, Jalala told Reuters in his Kabul office. He said that some accusations may be justified, others may be fabricated by villagers fearful of the Taliban. Reuters spoke to the families of four of the nine missing men and all said that their menfolk were taken to the Special Forces outpost by Afghan men identified as translators, often in the presence of U.S. soldiers. My brother Aziz Ul Rahman was on his way to bring firewood to the mosque when the Americans and the Afghans forced him to stop. They dragged him out of his car and they started beating and kicking him. He was 22 years old. Eventually, they tossed him in an irrigation ditch near the village. He was badly injured. So we took him to the hospital, but despite that, he died. This is the story as it's told by his brother. He had three children. The local government knows that these bastards, these Afghans, and these Americans torture, beat, and arrest people. And they do so all the time, but nothing is being done to stop them. Now, folks, it is absolutely possible that these crimes are being perpetrated by Americans. In fact, it's what you would expect based upon the educational system, the consequence of political correctness, and our indoctrination systems here in America, the indoctrination of the U.S. military, and the idiocy of this mission, sending boys into this kind of an environment. It is exactly what you would expect. It's why there was no chance to prevail. Speaking of another lose-lose game where there is no hope to prevail, that all America has done is made a bad situation worse by adding gasoline to a raging fire. Reuters is reporting that Syrian rebels have received advanced weapons and are aimed at narrowing the arms gap between President Bashar Assad's forces and reinforcing new rebel military commands, which Western countries hope can dilute the strength of the Islamist fighters. So now we're sending more weapons, more advanced weapons, because the weapons we have sent thus far have gone almost exclusively to fundamentalist Muslims, jihadists, who are far worse than Assad. And so we figure if we send more weapons, then there is a likelihood that some of those weapons will come into the hands of those who are not fundamentalist Islamic jihadists, and that will somehow balance the force that is being used against Assad. Can you say delusional? Can you say demented? Can you say deadly? Several rebel commanders and fighters told Reuters that a shipment which reached Syria via Turkey last month was comprised of shoulder-held and other mobile equipment, including anti-aircraft and armor piece-piercing weapons, mortars, and rocket launchers. You know, we gave the Taliban armor-piercing weapons. We gave the Taliban mortars. We gave the Taliban anti-aircraft missiles. During Jimmy Carter's administration, under a plan concocted by Zbigniew Brzezinski, his plan was to go to Pakistan and get Pakistan's permission to arm their Taliban so that their Taliban could give the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan a taste of what America faced in Vietnam with the Soviet Union backing the North Vietnamese and arming them. So that was our plan, and we supplied those kinds of weapons to the Taliban. And now we're fighting the very same Taliban. And now, not having learned that lesson and considered the consequence and the cost of doing that, of arming people who are prone to savagery, we're doing it all over again. We're repeating our same mistakes because in this country, there seems to be a proclivity for insanity. Isn't that the definition of insanity? Of continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different result? We're doing it all over again. Rebels told Reuters that weapons, along with money for cash payments for the fighters. Now, you would think that if you were a freedom fighter, that if you were fighting strictly because it was the right thing to do, that, boy, you know, I really want freedom for my country, that you wouldn't have to be bribed to do it. But that's not the case here. The fighters are being bribed. It harkens back to World War I, where Great Britain wanted a southern flank to fight the Ottoman Empire. And so what they did is they bribed Saudi Arabians in league with Wahhab and the Saud family of warlords. They bribed them. They provided weapons and money to bribe them to fight the Ottomans. And then they promised them, hey, if we all prevail, we'll give you your own personal estate. You can even call it a country. The birth of Saudi Arabia. Well, here we go again. So cash payments for the fighters were being distributed through a new command structure, part of a plan by foreign backers to centralize control over rebel units and check Islamics linked to Al-Qaeda. There are no Islamists linked to Al-Qaeda fighting in Syria. There are Islamists linked to Islam fighting in Syria. And the more weapons we supply, the more money we supply, the more backing we supply, the more powerful those Islamists linked to Islam will be, and the worse the outcome will be for Syria. However, in a sign of the difficulty in uniting desperate fighting groups, some rebels say that they had turned down the arms and refused to submit to the new command. So why would rebels say, I don't want your money, don't want your weapons, because I don't want you to tell me what to do? Because those that are receiving most of the weapons, those that have the most brutal tactics, are the fundamentalists. And most people are saying, I don't want any part of this because I lose no matter what happens. Well, not nearly enough to tip the military balance against Assad, who is able to deploy air power, missiles, and artillery to devastating effect against rebel areas. Any significant arms shipment is a boost to the rebels, who have long complained about a lack of international support. You know, the rebels don't have outward U.S. and European support. America and Europe are channeling weapons secretly through Qatar and Saudi Arabia because of the fact that the preponderance of the violence that is being perpetrated in Syria is being caused by the so-called rebels. And that most of them, most of the fighters, are fundamentalist Muslims. They're the very people that America claimed it was fighting in its invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. The very people who perpetrated 9/11. And so we're arming them now, and no one wants to, is a bit cautious about how many arms do you supply to people that you know are rotten to the core. It's the question of World War II, where America provided weapons to Stalin's Soviet Union. Didn't turn out very well for the people of Russia or for Eastern Europe, did it? Well, not nearly enough to tip the military balance of power. We have turned Syria into killing fields. The rebels refused to specify who supplied the new weapons, saying that they did not want to embarrass foreign supporters, but said that they arrived openly via Turkey from donor countries. When they're coming from Turkey, they're coming from United States and Europe, as well as coming from the United States when they're coming from Qatar and Saudi Arabia. We have received the shipment legally and normally. Yes, it's legal. It's normal to receive weapons like anti-aircraft missiles, like armor-piercing weapons, like high-caliber machine guns. Those kind of weapons aren't legal to own in the United States. They're not legal to have here, and our government will confiscate them and throw the holder in prison. Oh, but in Syria, with a fundamentalist Muslim, here you go. How many weapons would you like?
Are you...
Your Saturday Miss, we're focusing on the mess that we have made in Syria, the fact that we've turned Syria into killing fields. Somewhere there will be accountability for the tens of thousands of people Americans' weapons have killed. You know, it was over a million people that died as a direct result of our invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. A million people. The blood of a million individuals stains the American conscience. And here now in Syria, most of those who have been killed with American weapons. Yes, it's true that that the Russians' weapons have been deployed by the Assad regime to kill people. And they have probably killed 40% of the total, but the majority have been killed with weapons that were supplied by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, that were furnished initially by America. The Mujahideen that are fighting the Assad government said the weapons are not enough to help us win. Another shipment arrived from Turkey, but we have not yet been able to deploy it. He said that the foreign donors were still waiting for the Syrian opposition to form a transitional government to work with the rebel command. It's just like Libya, that we got the nastiest of the jihadists to form a transitional government. And so a country that was previously run by a secular thug is now run by religious thugs, with the religion being Islam, which is a declaration of war against all humankind. The political opposition will meet in Istanbul on Saturday to choose a prime minister in the transitional government, and also is supposed to choose a civilian defense minister. The Syrian, by the way, they'll have no influence over the deployment of the weapons in Syria. The fight in Syria is being waged by Sunni terrorist organizations. The Syrian revolt erupted nearly 2 years ago, as we all know, starting with peaceful protests to reform, but it developed into an armed insurgency and then a civil war. And here they're saying that it did so because Assad responded to the uprising with an ever-growing force. Actually, it turned into a bloody cauldron of death because Saudi Arabia and Qatar wanted to thwart the growth of Shia Islam in the region that was a direct result of America's invasion of Iraq. When America gave Iraq, which was under the control of a Sunni dictator, to Iran, Iran's influence in the region grew dramatically. And so Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait and other countries, including even Turkey to an extent, provided the weaponry, and we turned it into the killing fields. 70,000 people have died. 70,000 people are missing. Hundreds of thousands of women have been raped. All as a result of turning peaceful protests into a civil war. Although many countries backed Assad's opponent, few have actually supported arming the rebels, fearing that the weapons will end up in the hands of hardened Sunni Muslim militants and lead to a repeat of Western conflicts such as the wars against the Taliban in Afghanistan. Yes, indeed. We armed the Taliban, fundamentalist Muslims, and then we went to war against them. Here in Syria, we're arming very similar ideologies, very similar individuals, so that what? We can go to war against them with our own weapons? Do you think that maybe the conspiracy theorists, if they were to focus on this as opposed to 9/11, might find a conspiracy worth unveiling, worth unmasking? That America has this hideous tendency to manufacture its next enemy, to arm and equip its next enemy, and then send its boys and girls out to fight that enemy and to be killed by that enemy, an enemy which is deploying the weapons that it was provided by America. We did it with the Soviet Union. We did it with Mao's China. We did it with the Taliban in Afghanistan. We did it with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And now we're doing it in Syria. Does the American government want our young men and women to be deployed in wars fighting against weapons that we ourselves supplied? Or are they just hopelessly stupid?
Farmers keep their livestock lean and healthy with a mineral-rich diet. Before market, they cut off minerals, leaving them to crave high-calorie grains. If weight control is this easy, why prescribe surgery for humans? Avoid 900 different diseases.